Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme that our quiet on sing able. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hey, King Shazam the Turbo! All rise for King Shazam the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Green lights, you should be getting it now. Both sides of the mux is powered up. Copy.
Hello, my name is Gary Chu, and welcome to my business, ISU. Since the beginning of time, people have wanted to travel around the world. From riding horse wagons to riding elephants, innovations have allowed for safer and faster travel. To get from Toronto to New York City, it would have taken 6 days to get there on foot. Even on horseback, the journey would have taken 2.5 days. There was no way anyone could travel around the country until a man created the ultimate invention. the automobile. Dating all the way back to 1769, the grandfather of the automobile came to life. Nicholas Joseph Conant, a military engineer, demonstrates the world's first self-propelled steam engine vehicle. It was designed to transport cannons and had a top speed of 2.5 miles per hour. Nicholas Conant's steam-powered vehicle has gone down in history as the first car in the world. While a steam vehicle was new and revolutionary, it needed many innovations. The vehicle was reported to be very unstable due to poor weight distribution. The boiler performance was also poor, with the fire needing to be relit and the steam had to be raised every 15 minutes. This reduced its overall speed even more. In 1801, Richard Trevithick relocated the boiler and added a new carriage. It was the first road carriage with a speed of 13 kilometers per hour. Inventors all over the world raced to create the first gas-powered engine. Isaac de Rivas invented an internal combustion engine that used a mixture of hydrogen and oxygen for fuel. However, his vehicle had a very poor design and needed to be innovated. In 1862, John Lenoir invents the first engine to use gasoline. The engine was not used in any vehicle until German engineer Carl Benz makes the world's first gas-powered vehicle, the motor wagon. Made in 1885, it had three wheels, one cylinder, and a handle instead of a steering wheel. The motor wagon is also the world's first commercial automobile and is often considered the first car. While it was a huge step in engineering, no one believed it would work until Carl Benz's wife drove the motor wagon over 100 kilometers. In 1903, Henry Ford becomes founder of the Ford Motor Company. He creates the first modern assembly lines to mass-produce cars. In 1908, the introduction of his Ford Model T automobile revolutionized the transportation industry. It is generally regarded as the first affordable automobile because of the automated assembly lines rather than human labor. It introduced features such as headlights, a horn, pedal controls, and much more. As the sole owner of the Ford company, Henry Ford becomes one of the richest people in the world. The increased popularity of cars sparked many racing events. In 1903, the first Grand Prix is organized, and in 1910, cars began to be made for racing purposes. Race cars featured sleek, aerodynamic designs, and powerful engines. In 1920, the first luxury automobiles were made. These cars were luxurious and were intended for the comfort and satisfaction of its owner and driver. The main buyers were wealthy citizens, including film stars, movie stars, and more. In 1940, the first stretch limos were made and were used to transport the famous and wealthy. Also in 1940, the first jeeps were built. During World War II, the military saw the importance of a fast, lightweight, all-terrain vehicle. Throughout the 1950s, engine power and vehicle speeds rose. Designs became more integrated and artful, and cars have spread around the world. Today, all forms of automobiles are available, from SUVs to Ferraris, from race cars to motorcycles. The automobile has revolutionized the world and will continue to do so for a very long time. As car companies and manufacturers strive for fuel-efficient and environmentally friendly cars, the automobile is still being innovated. New features such as sliding doors, integrated GPS, push-to-start, and more are constantly innovating cars around the world. The automobile started off as a slow, steam-powered wagon. With unstable performance and inconvenience, innovations to the automobile were needed. As more engineers raced to create gas-powered engines, the automobile became faster and faster. The motor wagon revolutionized the world. The Ford Model T raced into the scene, and the whole world had cars. Cars are widely seen as gas eaters and are often held responsible for climate change. As technology progresses, the automobile will continue to reinvent itself. Until a simpler, cheaper way to travel is found, the automobile will leave all other competitors in the dust.
Of all the ways to get around, why is it that our favorite is by the way of explosion? Were there ever steam cars or electric cars back then? We'll find out as we look at the history of automobiles. Hello, dear friends of the horseless carriage. My name is Brett, and welcome to It's History. So in a time not so long ago, only 140 years actually, 1875, though the exact year is debatable, the first cast-powered car, a bulky behemoth built by Siegfried Marcus, appeared. This prototype has been preserved and can still be seen at the Technical Museum of Vienna, but you can't drive it because it's no longer working. But even in its heyday, it wasn't the easiest of machines to maneuver. Its hand-operated clutch had to be continuously operated with one hand, while the other performed a juggling act between steering the car with the crank and regulating the fuel mixture with another knob. No wonder in 1875 isn't considered the birthday of the car, but 1886. It was then that Carl Benz introduced his motor car to the public in Mannheim. In 1888, he went into serious production. It took him 3 years of hard work to persuade everyone that his invention was suitable for everyday life. But his wife, Bertha Benz, should have the greater glory, for not only did she finance all of his research, but in 1888, she achieved the first big cross-country trip by car from Mannheim to Pforzheim and back. Each way was a little more than 60 miles. Today, this way mainly follows the Autobahn, and on a good day would take about an hour. But in her time, Mrs. Benz meandered around nice, winding landscapes, and she needed 2 days to do it. Well, along with everything else, she had a lot to do, because the car was a lot of work. The chain ripped, the brake pads broke, the pipes clogged up, and of course, problems with the starter. She was able to fix the pipe with the help of the needle that she had carried in her hat. And the cable from the starter, well, she isolated with her garter. What else? Refueling. For this, she used a cleaning solution that contained gasoline. Sounds more like a nightmare ride, but she proved that you could trust the Benz to take you out of the city. Because that was the big question. What do you do outside a city on unpaved roads without people around in the area to help you? By the way, since 2008, there are now signposts that marked her journey. And because the way that she drove has become so historical, it was chosen 2 years ago as the test track for Mercedes-Benz's self-driving car. And this ride did not go that smooth either. One time the computer for the self-driven car got confused by a garbage truck passing by, and another by a car that just so happened to be parked in the middle of the road and needed some human help. But nonetheless, the computer alone did almost all of the driving. Universities have been researching for quite some time now about autonomous driving, along with information giant Google. But let's stay a little longer with those cars that needed winches and hand power to move. So why didn't everyone pounce on this new invention like a hungry wolf on a new breed of juicy sheep? Why was it that Mrs. Benz had to demonstrate that she could drive the thing alone? It's simple. There was already established competition. The motor car had to contend with others like electric vehicles and steam carriages and even hydrogen-powered cars. Yes, the electric car is significantly older than the gasoline engine. Since the end of the 18th century, inventors had been tinkering with wagons in the search of ways to power them without the use of animals. Now, horses, though they are nice, needed lots of care, food, and you couldn't switch them off. In this increasingly modern age, people found their way into cities and away from the stables with less time for most anything, let alone horses. So yes, the need was there, but the technology wasn't. The steam engine seemed the most promising. Now in 1781, James Watt had the engine so well perfected that it was ready for daily use. And already by 1769, the first steam car had been built by a man named Nicolas Joseph Cugnot. It was built as a commercial vehicle for the military that was powerful and stable, but also impossible to steer. The thing crashed probably more often against the barracks walls than anywhere else, but it was the beginning. Today it has its place of honor in the Paris Conservatory of Arts and Crafts. Steam engines are heat engines with external combustion. Steam engines are very large and need well-insulated boilers to generate steam. This may have been appropriate for powerful locomotives, but rather difficult to pull off for a small car. I mean, imagine how a Mini would look like attached to a giant boiler. Benz's car had an internal combustion engine. Here the energy is produced inside and ensures an equal transfer of motion. The cylinder compresses the gas mixture, and the mixture is ignited and pushes the cylinder up and down in a rotating motion. It is efficient, but far more complex than the steam engine, which is why it didn't take on so quickly. It was already invented in the early 19th century. Exactly when and by whom is hard to say. A glory many inventors claim for themselves. A good bet is the likely candidate, Nissefor Niepce. He built in 1806 a boat that was propelled by an internal combustion engine. The engine went by the poetic name Pure Leofore. In 1807, the Swiss François-Isaac de Rivaz introduced an internal combustion engine that could be powered with hydrogen. Now, hydrogen cars are therefore not a new invention either. And the problem with hydrogen was then as it is now. It's not so hard to break down, and if something does go wrong, well, let's just hope you're not within a mile of the thing. Hermann Jacobi built the first electric motor in 1834. With the electric motor, nothing must be burnt, nor any controlled explosions. He used electricity to generate the phenomenon of a magnetic field. With this magnetic field, he was able to rotate an axle over a static magnet. The advantages? The engine needed very few parts and didn't even require physical contact with each other, which would otherwise lead to loss due to friction. The whole complex transferring mechanism, which is necessary for the combustion engine, is eliminated. Connect the electromotor to the axis current and bam, done. More power, the faster you go. Less, and you go slower. Problem? Where does the power come from? An electric car doesn't need fuel, but it needs batteries. The first electric car was not long in coming. It was built by Scottish chemist Robert Davidson in 1837. Rechargeable batteries were not available until 1859, thanks to an invention by Gaston Plante. But just as the electric car was built in 1880, so too was the first truly mobile car built with internal combustion engines. The fact that the latter had prevailed was probably a combination of many factors. Oil and its derivatives were cheap. Fuel in delightful bottles instead of weird little electrical boxes with dangerous-looking connections were probably easier to accept by people of the time. And soon, electric motors became outclassed, at least temporarily in terms of performance, with the developments of Daimler and Maybach's four-stroke engine. Gasoline and diesel, which was at first only used for agriculture, won the race. By the beginning of the 20th century, the automobile became a mass product, and the world began to change completely. Roads were converted and rebuilt, and new rules for traffic were invented. The once safe and sure jobs that depended on horses disappeared, while other industries began to develop with the automobile, mostly the war industry. Tanks, armored ships, tank transporters. In the last decade especially, electronics have conquered the car. Every modern car door now has its trade secrets and more computing power than the Apollo lunar landing. And like I already said, the historical route once driven alone by Mrs. Benz was almost done alone by a computer. And hey, the electric motor has become interesting again. Since then, the company Tesla is driving the development towards a better battery, and others in America and Germany are building charging stations. So what do you think? Will we soon be out of fuel, or will we no longer need it? And would you let yourselves be chauffeured by a computer? Let us know what you think in our comment section below. And hey, if you missed any of the other technologies and inventions that came out of the Industrial Revolution, check out our playlist over here. All right, well, see you until next season. Bye-bye.
Motor car is not the invention of any single individual or country. It has developed in different forms all over the world and become a symbol of national taste and artistry, of engineering skill and of craftsmanship. It is an obscure history, with many nations claiming the motor car as the invention of their countrymen, because it is, and always has been, a mixture of romance and reality, of fiction and of fact. Here are but some of the multitude of inventions and of ideas, of dreams and of designs that led to the dawn of motoring. The history of the motor car begins with the wheel. For thousands of years, this early invention is the basis of nearly all land vehicles, and it is developed and modified in countless ways. Wheels become highly sophisticated engineering. But in King George III's reign, it still takes as long to travel from London to Manchester as it did from Londinium to Mancunium 1,600 years earlier in the days of the Emperor Hadrian. The dawn of motoring was slow and precarious. The cars that are affectionately known in motoring history as the veterans transformed it. It's in the 1890s that the Benz Victoria becomes one of the first motor cars to be sold in quantity to the public. It has little more than a single-cylinder gas engine, modified to run on petrol. The First World War brought the motor industry to a standstill. The splendid veteran cars of pre-war years are used by officers or laid up for the duration. Joyriding is a crime, but a great army of engineers and mechanics has been trained to build and maintain the machines of war. And the petrol engine has been developed to give greater and greater power. This wartime development of the petrol engine and of the engineering industry opens up the way for the most exciting and glamorous age of motoring.
Since man first discovered that he could, by the simple expedient of putting one foot in front of the other, move from here to there, he has forever sought ways to reach his destination in the shortest time possible. And with the idea of getting somewhere in a hurry, the Pony Express rider ushered in a new era of transportation. This fellow rode hundreds of miles, swam rivers, and fought Indians, just so the folks out west could get a letter from Aunt Minnie. The old Conestogas, commonly known as the covered wagons, were the trailers of yesterday. A hitchhiker. Well, maybe times haven't changed so much after all. Prairie schooner transportation was used to pioneer the West, and the deep ruts made by the heavy iron-rimmed wheels can still be seen across the prairies and the mountains and the desert. The overland stage carried paying passengers and express. And would you believe it, the father of the American stagecoach is this sissy-looking affair, a coach and four, no less, used on the continent long before the Indians ever saw their first pale face. We might call this buggy with the cabbie one of New York's first taxis. And of course, the junk wagon came along as soon as folks began to throw away yesterday's newspaper. Speaking of transportation, you see that little fella on top? He rides around town, takes it easy, while Tony give it a push. But then, as now, a fire is something to get to in a hurry. Now here's something interesting. One of the first sightseeing buses on record. Well, that's very interesting. Now we've seen and heard everything. There's no music in the world more lovely than the merry jingle of old-fashioned sleigh bells and the clear, crisp air of a wintry day. A scene like that brings back memories, huh? The horse-drawn streetcar was, at the time, a miracle of transportation. Here, the first strap hangers met to discuss John L. Sullivan's chances in the big fight. Of course, when they came to a hill, everybody had to get out and push. In the meantime, all went smoothly as long as Dobbin had his head. And this looks like a Broadway first night. Those fancy forerunners of the modern limousine delivering the elite to the door of the Rouge cabs, no less. What? Autographs? But it being summer, these lovelies came in the open-air streetcar. Well, punch my ticket, Mr. Conductor, if they aren't cute. But when the streets got too crowded, man figured he could get from here to there somewhat quicker if he rode up above the traffic. So the elevateds came into being. Highways of steel that flashed by windows 3 and 4 stories above the ground. A monument to man's ingenuity. And then what happened? They weren't satisfied, so they went down under the ground, too. Subways, miles of tunnels, arteries of rolling trains beneath Manhattan. In 1830, this monstrous demon appeared. It nearly scared the cows to death. That fellow who ran ahead's probably going to shoo one off the track now. Here's another old number. Those open-air coaches in the back give a swell view for an excursion. This train came along at the turn of the century. Take a gander at that headlight. It's big enough for the opening of a Hollywood supermarket. And look at the woodpile in the tender car. Bet that fireman did a lot of chopping. Boy, after you got home from a trip like that, you had to comb the cinders out of your hair. A far cry from the old stagecoach days, this is the first fast freight. Gonna wear that bell out if they're not careful. Well, Well, the engines got bigger and more powerful until this happened. Intricate as the workings of a watch. Powerful as a tornado, a tribute to man's mechanical genius. Covered wagons took many months to cross the mountains, but this modern freight train with two engines does the job in a day. And here's the latest thing on rails, modern as tomorrow, the Streamliner. Here she comes. There she goes. A load of this. One of the first gasoline buggies, and they aren't going to a costume party either. Dusters and goggles were what the well-dressed motorist wore in those days. The first one-man top. Hey, he gets it in the hard way. Don't these contraptions ever get started? Ah, get a horse, mister. Then and now, a flat tire is still a flat tire. Ah, a bunch of the boys out for a ride. Pardon me, they're going for a beer. Here's a fellow and his girl in a sporty job. Wouldn't it be nice if they could all take a ride? But there's no room. Hey, what's this? How do you like that? A rumble seat in front. Maybe the engine's missing. Notice the family entrance in the rear. This fellow looks like he knew his business. Maybe we'll really get going. Already? Okay. They're off. You could have fooled me. Look at them. A veritable maze of traffic on a sunny Sunday afternoon. That one-man cop still kills me. And here's what happened three short decades later, not just on a Sunday afternoon, but any day in the week on Fifth Avenue. Millions of people still trying to get somewhere in a hurry. The Wright brothers came along and found a new way to get from here to there. But it flies, and the imagination of all mankind went soaring on newfound wings. Believe you me, a fellow was pretty brave in those days to sit out in front of those flimsy wings and that sputtering motor. But did we ever imagine that these kites with motors, as they were called in those days, would be used for such purposes as man has this day devised? Watch closely. You're seeing one of the first helicopters. Up it goes, and we mean straight up. Monoplanes of this type were responsible for many famous flying records. Chamberlain, Amelia Earhart, Wiley Post, and others flew ships similar to this one. The old Pony Express rider would have been amazed to see this United States mail plane. Tri-motored, all-metal, this machine received one of the first airmail contracts. The twin-motor transcontinental ship was a later development. Well, maybe they found out that two motors were enough to carry you from California to New York in less than a single day. But dwarfing all achievements in man's quest to conquer space are the giant clipper ships which fly broad expanses of ocean. Just think of it. You can board one of these flying hotels, eat and sleep as comfortably as in your own home, and play bridge with your fellow passengers while flying halfway around the world. No longer is distance measured by miles, but by oceans and continents, then and now. Who can tell what future manner or means man will contrive to reach his destination in the least possible time? Thus, man in each new age is a pioneer. perhaps in some future year, racing through the stratosphere faster than the light of day, man may outrace time itself. What's next? Who can tell?
Hello everybody, you're listening to www.shazizradio.com, Knights of the Round Table. Most of the knights must be out slaying dragons in their new automobiles. Could you jump over there to the superchat.html page where you have access to talk to not just the Shaziz Radio side, but you can talk to the Awake Radio side at the same time. You'll see some links that I posted in there, starting off from the history of the automobile and all the way up to modern day time with airplanes and helicopters and stuff like that. It's really interesting to look back into history and find out where it all started. Actually, the first motor carriages with steam power, big old clunky looking things, weighed too much, were off balance, and really super inefficient, probably seriously dangerous. But one of the things that if you're listening to these videos, there's multiple links down there, and actually you can go out there and YouTube it up, the history of the automobile, and you'll find out that back when the internal combustion engine was being developed, there was a race to see who could get it to run on gasoline or whatever. But one of the things that you really don't hear much about is that they were also working on hydrogen cars back in the day. Of course, you know the stigma of hydrogen because of the Hindenburg and such. Instead of using helium, they used hydrogen, and it turned out to be a real tragedy because of all that hydrogen up in that balloon, or blimp, or whatever you want to call it, Zeppelin. Anyway, it's really interesting to listen to all this. They were working on electric cars back in the day, and there's all kinds of different models, all kinds of different people from different portions of the world that were involved in actually developing the first automobiles. When you think back about how it all started, really hasn't been that long ago. One of the videos, the man in there mentioned that it's been about 140 years since the you know, the first invention of the automobile. So we're talking back, oh man, early before the 1800s, actually tried to get started building a doggone motor carriage of some sort. So they had electric ones they were working on, and gasoline ones that they were working on, and steam powered ones, and even hydrogen. You know, in 79, Stan Myers was driving around in a dune buggy that ran on water, and that technology, by the time he got around to it, was pretty impressive. Could have been by 79 all the way here we are, year 2016, we could have been so much further advanced with hydrogen technology. Because not only can you burn hydrogen fuel, but the exhaust that comes out of it is non-pollutant. It's basically comes out as water on the other end when the oxygen and hydrogen recombine. There's also hydrogen cells out there that when the oxygen and the hydrogen recombine, it releases electricity. So they have carbon-based cells that actually pick up the release of energy and basically store it like a battery. Anyway, it's really fascinating when you go to look at all the different innovations throughout the history. And then if you think about it hard enough and you look about you know, modern day conspiracy theories about spraying chemtrails in the sky and such, it's not a new concept for them to actually be spraying stuff in the sky. They used to use it for fertilizing, to fertilize the farms, and you know, when the airplane first really took off, so to speak, pardon the pun, when the airplane really took off and farmers had them to, fly over their land and see about their cattle and that kind of stuff, and military had them for their purposes, and moved on into, private industry and stuff for delivering all kinds of packages and people and all that kind of jazz. It's, you look back when they were spraying chemistry, chase off bugs or whatever. A lot of the chemicals that they used back in the days weren't healthy for people, but yet they sprayed the stuff anyway. And moving on into the modern day era, you got a conspiracy out there where they're actually spraying aluminum and barium oxides in order to fight the so-called climate change. And actually, if you listen to all of these video links that I posted in there, kind of touches on the base of just about everything from war to conspiracies. Where they, now don't get me wrong, they're not talking about conspiracies in the deal, but if you listen to what's being said, everything from alternative energy all the way up through spraying stuff in the air, weapons of war, and the industrial situation, environmental situation, all of it goes all the way back to basically the beginning of the industrial age and the invention of the automobile. You know, some folks out there want to blame pollution on the automobile, but it's there's a whole lot more to this thing than meets the eye. It's really fascinating to see what some of these folks put together that far back, and what we actually have come to the modern day, where you've got like heads-up displays on your cars where you can see your speed and your temperatures and all that stuff right there on the windshield as you're driving down the road. Imagine being somebody from back then when they're inventing that car, being somebody from now taking a car, a modern day vehicle with all the bells and whistles on it back in time, and showing them that. Imagine what they would have thought. It would have been pretty much amazing. They probably would have looked at you like you were from outer space or something, because some of these modern day cars kind of look like they could have been spaceships. It's really fascinating when you dig deeper into all the history of the planes, trains, and automobiles, and even trains. I looked for a deal on there, but kind of ran out of time to find a decent podcast about trains. But the history of the trains just as fascinating, and the railroad in itself, and how mankind has actually advanced forward all this time. When I see all the technical innovations that came about within just the last 200 years, from all the different technologies to the modern day technologies, to from communications to travel to the cell phones that you got now, computer age, the internet, all that, it's just amazing. And it's a good example of what mankind could actually accomplish when they set their mind to it. When people are out there to set free to just think and dream and design and create and invent, and there's competition out there, then people work a lot harder to get things accomplished. You know, the more that society advances, it seems like the less the average Joe wants to actually, get involved and try to make, more advancements. I mean, why? Because there's all kinds of brilliant individuals out there and industries and, the corporations and all that that bring you all the new products that you got. You know, hey, you just got to sit back and wait for the cake to be baked and then have a piece, right? Well, I'm trying to get the average Joe involved to basically do what was being done way back then. You know, the Wright brothers weren't probably necessarily the exact first people to ever try to fly, but as far as our history has shown, Yeah, they're the ones that are put at the forefront of who actually made the first flight. But since that first flight, the world changed with all that technology, with the capability of, instead of riding on horseback or walking even that, or, you know, some sort of wagon train, you could actually get places faster. Before, it took days just to cross small sections of land, where now it's only hours to cross hundreds of, maybe even thousands of miles across the face of the earth in order to be able to go visit people and be able to connect with each other and do business or whatever. And here on the internet, we can do it in a split second. You know, we can actually reach out, just like this podcast, if you're listening to it, or the live broadcast right now. I'm able to sit here and talk to people around the world, you know, with this technology. But technology is only as good as whatever it is that you intend on doing with it. You know, there are conspiracies and stories out there about basically technology, artificial intelligence basically running amok and eventually thinking that mankind ain't even worthy of being around, that mankind's just a nuisance, and so the technology takes over and leaves us behind. So we made artificial machines that eventually looked at us at like obsolete, no longer useful. But all these technologies leading up to the modern day, if you really look close as you're watching these podcasts, you'll find company names like back in the 50s or whatever, Raytheon and you know, General Motors and all these different big names that you hear today, they were still in power back then. You know, they were making a lot of money. And they, today, to this day, you know, I even saw a Kraft company in there that was in one of these older 50s videos or whatever. So a lot of these businesses and corporations have been around for quite some time, and they're still thriving today. So these industries pretty much rule the direction that we as humanity are going to go, as far as how fast the technology actually makes it to the marketplace, and, you know, what new inventions are going to get patents and be able to make it to the marketplace or whatever. But I think that the average Joe at some point is pretty much just going to lose track of any will to try to do anything for themselves, because at some point the machines are going to want to do it all. You know, now factories that are robotic, instead of having somebody there actually doing the job, actually kind of sounds good, that maybe the hardest portion of your job are going to be pushing a button or something, you know, like the Jetsons. He stood there all day long and pushed a button, and then he'd complain at the end of the day how sore his finger was from pushing the button all day, which you probably didn't even have to push it that much. But then when if that society or that system was to actually fall apart, wouldn't be nobody knew how to do anything. You know, with maybe the exception of a few minor people that had some pretty brilliant minds and a lot of knowledge of technology that everybody else didn't have. So in this day and age, knowledge definitely is power. That knowledge is money. If you want to earn a decent living, they say you got to go out to college, and in order to get into the system to where you're making a lot of money, you got to have this piece of paper that says that you've been educated in this fashion, that by this accredited school or whatever. Some of these folks that invented a lot of these things right here never really had a formal education. Some of them may have only, you know, went the first couple, two or three grades or something in school, enough to learn how to read and write and communicate, but then turned around and was able to invent something that changed the world. So, like I said, if you really go back and just kind of look at the past and see how things actually got to where they are today, You might just very well be amazed. Back in World War II, when they was having a fuel problem, they actually started burning wood gas into the military vehicles in order to be able to drive, because they couldn't necessarily get fuel in, but they could get some firewood and burn that and basically make a wood gas with a wood gasifier sitting in the back of the trucks, and they were still able to drive. Back in the old farming days, whenever the farmers were trying to conserve on fuel, they figured out a method by which they could actually, when they got the tractors up to operating temperature, start injecting water into the cylinders and run the tractors off of hydrogen technology. And as long as I've been doing mad science, I've talked about Stan Myers quite a bit, and it really never dawned on me that way back before Stan Myers ever even started working on it, back in the 1800s or probably prior to that, there was actually individuals out there working on hydrogen technology for the internal combustion engine. And there are also individuals out there working on technology for electric cars. Had some pretty impressive deals for the time, you know. And a lot of people, when they first saw the automobile coming there, they just thought it was not necessary. But on the pollution scale, can't remember the number of actually what they said, how many horses probably be in a town, but you could imagine what a town would smell like if you had it instead of a... let's say you had 1,000 cars, instead there was 1,000 horses running through town, you know. They'd be kind of a watch where you step kind of episode, plus it'd get kind of smelly after a while, and probably wouldn't even really be that good as far as health-wise, because who knows, what health effects would actually have by having all them animals and people all combined into one little general vicinity, such as a small town or city or something like that. And if you got thousands of horses in town, you got to watch where you step. But there'd be a job out there for somebody to go around and clean up after the horses and that kind of stuff. And then there would have been a job for somebody to go around and feed the horses or, care for them, that kind of stuff. I wonder if you had to pay for parking, Somebody would come out there and strap your horse to a pole and give him a penny and, I'll be back in an hour, that kind of deal. But, like I said, it's really fascinating to look back to see what all was going on back then and all the way up to the modern day era. It wasn't just the industrial age that basically caused pollution back in the day. It was the biggest time. But when they were starting to try to, basically back whenever they were making kerosene for lanterns to light up builds, one of the byproducts that they had was gasoline. Well, the gasoline was a little too highly volatile. You couldn't necessarily burn it in a lantern without blowing yourself up or setting something on fire. So there was actually a point in history where they were actually dumping that down in ditches to get rid of it. It was... a waste product that they didn't know what to do with, until finally somebody came along and figured out how to use it in the internal combustion engine. The first engines they talked about being steam, and then they moved up to like a one-cylinder gasoline engine. I think I've seen a video quite some time back where they used to have this motor called a hit-and-miss motor. Only had like one cylinder and all that kind of stuff, and it's basically, they called it a hit and miss because that's what it actually sounded like whenever it was when it was running. And looking back at the advancements from Henry Ford all the way up to the modern day time, and even prior to that, the safety devices in vehicles, the technology such as the radios and the heating system. Back during the Model T and the Model A days, wasn't no heater in your car, so I can imagine what it'd be like running around in one of those cars where you didn't get as much speed out of the car, and it might take you a lot longer to get to where you want to go if you're going to travel very far. Heck, by the time you get to the other side, you'd be freezing your booty off. It'd be probably not the best ride in the world, but who knows, it might have been really exciting. It might have been real fun to ride around in one of those old Model Ts back in the day. Not having to worry about serious traffic jams, because not everybody had cars. And actually, ironically enough, there's still laws on the books, like, say, in Kansas City, where you're not even supposed to drive a motor carriage across from one side. You're supposed to get out and have somebody tow you to the other side with a horse-drawn carriage. Then you can start it up when you get on the other side of the deal. And there's actually some places where they had laws where the man had to get out and walk with a lantern ahead of the woman who was driving the car. And boy, yeah, I tell you what, that'd be really interesting to see them try to pull that one off in today's modern age. It'd be a real hoot. How many people's actually breaking the law because they never really took that law off the books that left it on there for historical value. But the I guess the point I'm trying to get to is that in the short history of technology, such as, you know, from the light bulb to the car to the, you know, airplanes and boats and trains and all that kind of stuff, mankind, when they really want to get their act together, really can create all kinds of amazing things, really can put technology together that really makes a difference in the world. Like, could you imagine actually plowing a field back in the old days with some mules and an old style plow? Nowadays they do hundreds of thousands of acres and basically big giant combines and machines and tractors that, you know, till up the soil and plant the seeds and all that kind of stuff and can fertilize it from the air or the ground. And basically make a whole lot of food. A lot more food can be produced this way because of all the technology. They've actually got combines that have GPS, global positioning systems, in it where pretty much it's almost to the point where the farmer doesn't even really have to drive, just kind of sit there and monitor things, and the tractor does all the work. So it'll be really amazing to see if things are the way they are now, how they'd be in another 20 years if, you know, mankind didn't destroy themselves via some sort of war like World War III or whatever and just kept on advancing. It'd be really interesting to see how things would turn out technology-wise. But back in the days when the man was pulling the plow with the doggone mules, that was some hard, tedious labor. I can only imagine. You know, I've never pulled a plow with a horse or mule or whatever, but I can see right now you're standing out in the heat and dragging that thing around behind that horse or mule. It'd get a little old pretty quick. Nowadays, with the technology, they can make a whole lot more food a lot faster, which is another reason why it really kind of bothers me that as advanced as we are, there's still people in this world that are in need. There's still people in this world that can't seem to get no food. There's stores all over the place, and there's warehouses all over the place. There's food on the way to the warehouses and to the stores, and food being grown. And yet, with all the technology, all the advancements that we've made all this time, there's still people in this world that need things. There's still people in this world that don't have a home, and there's still people in the world living out in war zones and, you know, sick to diseases that shouldn't even be in existence anymore. Because the vaccines from way back when that advanced all the way up to the modern day vaccines that when there's actually a conspiracy theory out about that, where, you know, some of it's been proven to be actual fact that there were vaccines that were tainted with things that they shouldn't have been tainted with, causing autism and all kinds of stuff. So at some point, somebody dropped the ball as far as safety in that particular deal, but there still shouldn't be people in the world dying of diseases that were treatable, you know, for at least 50 to 100 years. It's You know, I don't know the entire history of all the vaccines or medical advancements, but what I do know is that there's a lot of things that, you know, we take for granted as far as medical wise that people on the other side of the planet would love to have. I mean, it's a life, their life depends on whether they have it or not. And for somebody in this world to die because they don't have access to clean water or good medicine or technologies that could diagnose, you know, things, problems health-wise, it's just, to me, it's a doggone waste, man. It's disgusting. There's so much that mankind could actually accomplish if we put our minds together, if we could actually get our act together. If we could get that drive, like back whenever the excitement of actually being the first to get an internal combustion engine running, or a hydrogen engine, or even an electric car, or whatever, all the different technologies from electricity, from medicine, to Tesla, to medical advancements, and it would have been a really amazing time to live in, as far as I'm concerned, for an inventor, you know, because everything was new, but it was you know, up and coming, and everybody wanted to be the first, you know, to be able to prove it, you know, to do it. And there are still folks like that out there in this world today that want to create and design. I myself was one of them. I'd love to make some advancements to benefit humanity. But it all falls back down to, once you got it, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to give everybody in the world a chance to live comfortably like you're living with your technology? Are you going to share the health benefits and resources around the world with one another? Or are you going to let it all fall into, you know, war, death and destruction? Some of the planes that they used to dust crops with, they started off in like World War One, and they used to drop bombs and, you know, fly around shooting at other planes and stuff. Took what would have been a really good advancement in human history and basically turned it into a weapon of war. It's not the first advancement that was ever turned into a weapon of war, you know. When Einstein figured out his theory of relativity, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, you know, he was just trying to figure out things. Who'd have guessed that it ever led up to the atomic bomb, you know? And then when the first atomic bomb was dropped, and thousands of people in a blink of an eye and a flash of light just up and, you know, were vaporized or seriously wounded or, you know, whatever. History and mankind changed in a brief instance with that technology. Just nothing was ever going to be the same again. And the advancements in that technology to this very day keep getting bigger and badder. You know, the more stronger the bomb, the more powerful the nation, kind of deal. They talk about nuclear arms treaties, about you know, bringing peace to the world and all that kind of stuff. But it's not just in the nuclear realm that mankind has the potential of disaster. You know, it's, believe it or not, it's actually in the social realm as well. Being manipulating people to hate one another because of whatever color or religious beliefs that they may or may not have. Humanity's got a long way to go as far as growing up, you know. We have capabilities to create amazing things. We have capabilities to be awesome caretakers of one another, to take care of each other, to ensure that nobody's homeless and nobody's starving, and, you know, that we help heal the sick. That's in a perfect world. I guess that would be the utopia, so to speak. Getting mankind to actually come to the table in peace as opposed to war has pretty much proven to be a tedious task at the very least. You know, if you think back about all these different wars out there and all the wasted lives and all the wasted materials and the death and destruction and just sheer ridiculousness of the whole mess, what people were fighting over. You know, even in the industries, during the Industrial Revolution, as they like to call it, which I guess is a pretty good name because it was kind of a revolution. It was people fighting amongst each other for jobs and people fighting amongst each other for who's going to have control of the electricity that was generated or the fuel, the internal combustion engine, the auto industry or whatever. So many different advancements and companies fighting over who's going to be the most powerful in the railroad industry or any of the transportation or communication industries. If you go back in time and you actually look at some of the names back in the day, you might be surprised to see that some of those names are still going strong today. So for over 140 years, these companies have been basically in charge. In charge of what technology is put out there on the market and what technology isn't, you know? So, where do we go from here? How do we, as the people, the majority, how do we dictate where our future is actually going to go? Because it seems like every generation becomes more complicit and more compliant and more just passive. And allow things that, you know, back in the day wouldn't even have been tolerated at all from companies and governments around the world. And they weren't hindered back in the day such as they are now as far as technologically advancements or whatever and actually being able to get things out there. You know, of course, since the beginning of the whole patent industry where you got to get a patent on there to be able to protect your rights as far as whatever you design, your intellectual rights, your designs and all that. Somebody got control of that a long time ago. You know, to this very day, you can't patent anything that remotely says it has to do with perpetual motion or free energy. Because I guess at some point in time, people were patenting just about everything they could get their hands on, and some of them weren't good, and some of them were good, and so it kind of muddied up the water of what was out there and what ain't out there. I mean, talk about hydrogen technology, and Stan Myers in the 70s, not very many people realized that way before Stan Myers, there was people working on hydrogen technology. The Hindenburg was flying with hydrogen up in the Zeppelin or blimp or whatever you want to call it, big balloon, and it had a problem. A lot of people lost their lives when that thing went up in flames. It was a pretty big tragedy in history. All these technologies out here, though, could have taken mankind into such a better direction than what we've gone. Instead of designing all of these things and using them for weapons of war and destruction, we could have used them to help one another out. You know, right now we've got planes and jets and helicopters that'll take off vertically and be able to land anywhere, just about anywhere, on aircraft carriers out in the middle of the ocean. You know, up in the mountains and places where even by horseback it'd take you a long time to get there. They got life flight helicopters that can rush to the rescue of individuals and bring them to safety really fast. And that kind of technology could be used to deliver products and services, food and medical supplies all over the world. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that there are people out there that actually, you know, do good stuff like this, that are actually out there using whatever resources and technologies they got to try to help individuals out. But on a overall scale, mankind hasn't done enough to help one another out. You know, once we got past the whole point of, you know, who's better than who and who's royalty and who's not, when we started coming to the age where the average Joe realized that we're all, you know, created equal and we all need to be good caretakers of one another and help one another. The government didn't necessarily follow in behind because continuity government power structures or corporations, lobbyists and all that kind of stuff, they didn't have the same plan as we the people. But we the people didn't hold our elected representatives feet to the fire with all these technologies that we've got today. We still don't. There's still people in the world, according to the mainstream media or entertainment industry, that comes out there and says, look, this baby over here is starving, and you know, this baby's dying, and that baby's sick, and this one's homeless, and there's homeless veterans and all this. Why? Why would that even be going on here in the year 2016 when we just went over a brief history in mankind's lifespans, 140 years to 200 years, where we went all the way from walking around to wagons, to motor carriages, to, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles, high technology, cell phones, computers, and, you know, there's really no excuse. There's absolutely no excuse that can be given or even remotely justified by whether it be the individual out there or the corporations or the government representatives in themselves. There's no excuse for anyone in this world to be suffering in the way that they're doing with all that we have available to us. We've got a vast amount of resources, yet we have people sitting around talking about how we're going to run out and we got to depopulate the planet. It's not sustainable. Sustainable is the biggest lie in the history of lies. Sustainable says that because somebody else isn't the same class as you, that they got to be either euthanized or set down to where they have birth control that won't allow them to have children and families. We got to depopulate the planet is basically what the Georgia Guidestone says. Got to bring the number of people down to a more manageable amount. Sustainable. You know, we can't get enough fresh water, even though the earth is mostly covered in water. Sustainable. When people say that word to me, it just drives me insane when it's attached to anything environmental. When it's attached to natural resources, and they say, well, it's not sustainable. There's too many people. And then they try to give you this crazy notion about if you put so many flies inside a jar and they'll basically overpopulate until all the oxygen's gone and the flies all die off. If you're educated, or you can consider yourself educated, and you believe this world is overpopulated, you need to go back to school. You need to take your indoctrination back to school and set things straight, because you haven't learned anything. As intelligent as you think you are, you think that you're more powerful than nature or creation, whatever the case may be, whether it be the aliens or God or whatever. Whatever it is that you believe, how mankind got here, If you honestly believe that this world is overpopulated and there's not going to be enough food and we're going to run out of oil, then you missed the boat. If you think that you can't we can't sustain what we've got, then you missed the wars. You missed the sicknesses, you missed the lies, the death and destruction that came along with the industrial age and prior, way prior. Wars where people would go out and steal each other's land. Wars where people would fight over gold and silver and water. Throughout the history of humanity, humanity's been given the greatest gift in the entire history of time and space, and the free will to do with whatever they will. But yet humanity chose to pick up the knife and the spear and the gun and the cannons and bombs and poisons and fight amongst each other. That's what they've done. Look back through the history of what you're told, what goes on in this world, and see all the death and destruction and the hate and discontent and racist acts throughout the entirety of mankind's history. So the greatest gift ever given to a species or whatever you want to call humanity was squandered away. And here we are at the crossroads. We stand here at the crossroads with the opportunity right now to literally change the direction of where humanity is going to end up. And you still have people spouting off about war. Spouting off talking about how we got to depopulate the planet. Bill Gates saying ignorance like, well, if we do a good enough job with vaccines, we can reduce the world's population. Wait a second, I thought vaccines were there to help, not hurt. We can send our young men and women over to foreign nations to fight with other young men and women from foreign nations and destroy each other's properties and lives. And depopulate the planet even more. Heck, there's a lot of people that are depopulating themselves over here in the United States, doing ridiculous stuff, getting into crashes or taking overdoses of drugs or whatever. So here humanity stands at the crossroad of time and space, and we actually have the opportunity to do something positive for the world. And a politician will stand up there and he'll say, well, I'm bringing you hope and change. And then he'll turn around and he'll hope and change you right out of existence. Right out of freedom. He'll put you in more wars and death and destruction. More debt. So humanity, the average Joe is a debt slave to the dollar, a debt slave to technologies, a debt slave to the future, and even the children being born owe more than they'll probably ever earn in a lifetime. This is what humanity's done. And it's a shame. But it's not beyond the realms of repair. That old saying, it's never even over till the fat lady sings. A fat lady ain't sung yet. And the battle isn't over. It isn't over until not one of us have a breath to, or the energy to stand or do or say anything. But it's actually coming that way. And it's coming fast. The more that mankind gets more technology under their belt, where now you got energy weapons and more powerful ways to hurt people and basically be able to hurt more people one go, It's a long ways from the spear and the knife to the six shooter to the 9mm Uzi all the way up to the assault rifles and everything else out there, 50 caliber machine guns and above. Ways to hurt one another. So while the weapons of war were advancing, the weapons of civilization were advancing, or the technologies of the civilization, it's a blurred line between any of them, because everything can be used as a weapon. Don't matter what it is. You can get on your cell phone and start a war. Call up and spread some propaganda to the right individual who will talk to their friends, who will talk to their friends, and the next thing you know, all heck breaks loose. Turn on my electric heater for some of that global warming. So society started off on foot, jumped on an animal and rode it across the prairies, built a wagon for the animal to drag, then built an engine for the horse would no longer be needed. Took to the skies, and took to the seas, took to the mountains. And mankind has spread like the plague. Yeah. All that knowledge and all that technology is right there in front of you at your fingertips. Advancements, research, history, and if you can find the true history, because somebody's always wanting to tell you some version of their version of the history. So at this stage in the game, if you think that you know the truth of all history, you're only fooling yourself and probably fooling others that you spread that to. Because none of us were all there. None of us were there when all this stuff was going on. None of us can 100% verify that we hadn't been lied to or indoctrinated into believing one way or another. Just like science can't prove creation or not creation or the Big Bang or not Big Bang, religions can't prove it on the other side. It's all a matter of faith, no matter how you look at it. We have faith that the guys in charge know what they're talking about, and they have our best interest at heart. Whether or not we have or haven't been to space, whether or not there is or isn't a one-world government, whether or not there is or isn't a, you know, Planet X or sky falling or whatever, doomsday scenario, living on the edge of sanity. Once again, though, here we stand at the crossroads. All of the humanity standing here where we have the opportunity to go left or right or forward. And it should be at this point where humanity actually comes together and analyzes everything that happened before we got where we're at, and comes to a unanimous decision that instead of us repeating the mistakes of the past and wars and rumors of wars and plagues and famine and pestilence and robbing and raping and looting and pillaging, that we're going to take this world into a better place. You know, the good book says that there'll be a man coming, he'll be offering peace, and there people will fall for it, and they'll buy it, and they'll head right on down that path, and then he'll turn around and give them just the opposite. We don't need fancy words. We don't need a one-world government. We don't need a one-world religion. We need everybody to be responsible for their own actions. We need everybody to pitch in. Communities to help one another out. Neighbors to help one another. families to take care of each other. If you don't want your child cursing in front of his child in the future, then don't curse in front of your child. It's as simple as that. I said this on a few different shows. There's a couple Palestinian girls, and there was a doggone reporter asking these two Palestinian girls if they ever wanted peace with Israel. And the words that came out of their mouth were heartbreaking, because they said, no, we hate Israel. We don't ever want peace with Israel. They killed our mom and dad. Two future fighters of some war in the world. Which is sad. Because I don't even scratch the surface of how many children out there feel the same exact way about other nations. And folks that want to sit around and point the finger towards this country or that country, it's America's fault. It's this group over here's fault. It's everybody's fault but the individual's fault. Nobody's ever at fault. It's always somebody else. It's always somebody else's problem. Some folks talk about how we're all connected to one another. And we all are like a combined consciousness. And so if those folks are right in what they're saying, then we're all responsible. And it's good books right, and we're all brothers and sisters and created equally. Then we're all responsible. Each and of us in our own little way are responsible for whatever we do in our own lives per day. When we get up out of bed and we go out into the world and we interact with other people, we got the choice whether we can treat them poorly or we can treat them the best we can. Whether we can be a servant to the community or a hindrance to the community. We have that option. We had that choice. Humanity's got some really cool tools and toys, technology. And if that technology was used for the proper, imagine where we could be today. You know, you can get on your cell phone if you need a few bucks for gas and somebody to bring you some gas or something. You can get on your cell phone, call somebody up, and they can bring you some gas. But that little kid in that third world country don't have access to that phone. He can't call you up and say, hey, can you bring me some food? But it's out of sight and out of mind, because some folks would say, well, you know, that's their parents' problem. No, it's everybody's problem when somebody's doing without. Because any time that you can sit around and you can have a full meal and there's somebody else out there starving and you can't find it in your own heart to be thankful for what you've got, to be appreciative to whoever brought it to you or made it possible while somebody else on the world is starving, that's sad. Not only sad for the person that's starving, but it's sad for you. It's sad for what made you the way you are. You can blame everything else out there on the government. You can blame everything in society on each other. But you can't seem to come down to the point where you can actually take the credit for your own actions. I mean, at least if you're going to throw it in the garbage, at least feed it to the animals outside so that it don't go to waste and somebody benefits. Companies out there talking about going green that are still wasting. Still, to this very day. Talk about energy crisis and ignore technologies that have been around since the 1800s and prior. The environmentalists out there that say they want to save the world are doing a terrible job. As they spend more time running around protesting and getting beat up and pepper sprayed and all that kind of stuff, when they don't understand, they focus on the wrong people. If your representatives made something legal, it's no use going out and protesting the individual who's doing what was made legal. Is all it's going to get you is the same thing it's got everybody else. And then if you're angry at the government and you decide you're going to go out and burn down your own communities, you're worse than the government. You just betrayed yourself and you just betrayed your family and your friends and your neighbors, the shopkeepers in your communities. You're worse than the government. You're worse than the people that you claim to despise that have oppressed you for all this time. And if you hate racism and slavery, but yet you go out and burn down your own communities until regulations are put on to you and your neighbors, not just you for the damage that you cause, but your neighbors and your friends and your community as well, and the noose gets tighter around everybody. It's almost as if some people, if they're miserable, have to ensure that everyone else around them is miserable as well. If I gotta feel bad, so do you. It's sad. It's really sad. There's gotta come a time when wisdom has gotta take over. There's got to come a time when people sit down at the table before you go off the cliff. A lot of terrible things have been done in history. And it's not just pinpointed to one single group or one single secret society or organization. It's pinpointed towards every man, woman, and child on this planet. Nobody out there has the power to make you do anything. But maybe you don't have the willpower to overcome the violence that they're trying to force you into doing something. I hope you understand what it is I'm trying to point out there. We've got access to everything that we need as humanity, technologically wise, mechanically, resource, and everything, to resolve every single issue that is before us on the table. One man by himself can't do it. A small group of individuals out there by themselves can't do it. It's going to take one of them combined joint efforts, such as when a tragedy like Katrina or any of the natural disasters or man-made disasters occur, and people from all over, from every race, creed, and color, political background, and religion come together in masses to ensure that everyone has a blanket and everyone has some water and everybody has some shelter and everybody is warm and fed. I used to get really upset whenever I'd go to a funeral, and the biggest thing that it dawned on me every time is that it always seemed to take a tragedy to bring a family together. Somebody always had to die before everybody would come together. And how far does humanity have to actually go before we come together? Those secret societies and organizations fighting amongst each other and us for power and knowledge? They're not looking out for your best interest. They don't want you being peaceful. They don't want you to not protest. As long as there is a drama on TV and you're willing to watch it, as long as you're being propagandized and you're willing to believe it, as long as you're not willing to research the facts that are presented to you and use the technologies for the good, then mankind will continue on the same exact path that we're at now. 20 to 100 years now, from now, if mankind's still in existence, there will be protesters, environmentalists. There will still be people complaining about the same system that they all had the power to fix before it got to the point that they had to complain. There will still be wars and death and destruction and militias and mercenaries, cops and robbers. And humanity will continue to play out the same exact drama over and over and over again. Like that crazy joke, if Pete and Repeat were standing in a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left? We don't have to keep repeating the mistakes of the past. We choose to keep repeating the mistakes of the past. And it doesn't matter where your spiritual life stands or the lack thereof. It doesn't matter whether you believe in a divine creator or not. What does matter is that whether we're on a flat plane underneath a dome or in a ball flying through space, Earth is our home. It's the ship that we travel on at this time in history. And if we can't take care of our own ship, if we can't maintain this boat, and it begins to leak and sink and burn, and we can't figure out a way to take every bit of knowledge that we've acquired throughout all this history of time to save not just the planet but humanity in itself, then maybe, just maybe, and I hate to say it, maybe we were just too ignorant to deserve to advance into something higher, some sort of higher enlightenment or whatever. If mankind was an experiment to see if chaos could be overcome by organization, it's failed. It's failed miserably. It's insane to think that repeating history is going to make this world any better. It's insane to think that dropping bombs and flexing your military might at other nations is going to make this world any better. It's insane to think that by allowing this section of the population to die off because we don't agree with them, it's going to make this world any better. If you're an atheist and you want all Christians to die or vice versa, if you're a Muslim and you think it's necessary for you to go out chopping off heads and killing the folks that don't believe the way that you believe, it's insane to think that you're going to make this world any better. Every time somebody violates somebody else wants retaliation. Somebody else wants revenge. Somebody else wants somebody to pay for their crimes. So for every positive pebble that you throw out there, you're going to get some positive back. And for every negative pebble that you throw out there, you're going to get some negative back. If you go up and you set a stone down on the windowsill next to the glass is still intact. But if you become impatient and you decide to throw it over there to the windowsill, and the rock hits the glass and shatters it into millions of pieces, and then you go over and cut yourself while trying to put the stone up on the deal. I hope you can see what I'm trying to point out. They say that for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. For every choice made, there's a result. So here we stand at the crossroads of time and space, and as humanity we got to decide whether or not we're going to keep rolling on towards destruction, or we're going to get our act together so that all those folks that came before us who fought for what they believed in and fought for freedom, lives weren't sacrificed in vain. You know, it's crazy how people will complain about one society sacrificing animals or something, but yet those same individuals have no problem with sacrificing humanity in each other's wars. Just things to think about. If you got grandchildren, you want your children to grow up in a better world. If your representatives profess to want to save the children, then maybe they should practice what they preach and not drop bombs on one another. Because the thing about a bomb is, it doesn't discriminate. A bomb doesn't care whether you're black or white or red or yellow. Doesn't care whether you're a man, a woman, or a child. Now, sure, one day they'll probably invent a target-specific bomb that will just get the individual look that they want. Huh, imagine that. I guess they already did that. They call it a bullet. Bad that whenever things get so bad that you think that we gotta go out and kill one another. Golden rule, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. What a world. All the way from foot power to horsepower, to planes, trains, and automobiles, to worldwide internet, the World Wide Web, the superhighway of electronic and digital information. And all you can sit around and complain about is what somebody else is doing. The only fault that you can find is the world that surrounds you. I'm not responsible for wars. I'm not responsible for slavery. I'm not responsible for starvation or sickness. I'm responsible for me and me alone. Or am I? Maybe some of the choices in my life could have been made better. Maybe some of the things that I could have said or done could have made a difference in this world. And so just on the off chance that something as simple as a word can resonate to the entire world and try to right the wrongs of the past and make the world a better place, one little positive phrase at a time. Just by that off chance, I put together the Knights of the Round Table and ShazizRadio.com. Shaziz Mad Science on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. Just on the off chance that somebody would hear the words coming out of my mouth and agree. And somehow or another, those words would resonate with other like-minded individuals who would get motivated and then in turn start to treat one another better than humanity has done so far. That's why I do what it is that I do. That's why I continue to say what it is that I say. That's why I'm not willing to give up why I still hold out hope for humanity. And if only one person hears my voice, if one person hears the voice of reason in a crowd of chaos and does anything to make this world a better place, then it was all worthwhile. Because I still believe in the dream.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great
one. If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. Thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. A field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Wondering, will Mother Earth survive?
says he's the turbo. Always working, says he's the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html or contact me on Skype, user Shaziz. And you can actually become one of the Knights of the Round Table just simply by calling in. Or become one of the honorary Knights of the Round Table just by showing up in the chat room and posting pertinent links to the conversations and new information that you need to get out there to other individuals out there. I posted some links in there about the history of hydrogen. Actually, even posted a Google link to for a search for the history of hydrogen. And when you start to really look back at what actually was, how far back this goes, the discovery and use. In 1671, Robert Boyle discovered and described the reaction between iron filings and dilute acids, which result in the production of hydrogen gas. In 1766, Henry Cavendish was the first to recognize hydrogen gas as a discrete substance by naming the gas from a metal / acid reaction flammable air. So, we know that we can burn water, and we know that we can burn oxygen. We know that whenever you use that in an internal combustion engine, what comes up the other side is water and oxygen and hydrogen. So that's a no-brainer as far as the alternative energy community goes. I actually was working on hydrogen engines way back in those times when the automobile was first coming around, when the race to develop the first motorized vehicles first came around. And so all this technology that we've talked about throughout all the duration of the Knights of the Round Table and mad science and all of that, these are all tools. Everything out here, this internet, the tools, the knowledge out there, tools, pieces of the puzzle. But not one of these pieces of the puzzle is going to be worth anything by itself. In order to resolve all the problems that we've got going on in the world today, if indeed problems really exist, and maybe not just in the minds of those who have been indoctrinated and propagandized by the system to tell you what to believe and what not. The adventure of discovery has been going on since the dawn of mankind. Once we've got all these things discovered, where we now stand here on a crossroads in history where we have every single answer to every single problem, all the solutions on the table, all the technologies, all the world's resources, and yet we can't seem to get our act together. We can't seem to resolve problems that have been going on for a long time. We can't seem to heal the sick, and we can't seem to shelter the homeless or feed the hungry. We can't seem to stop the wars or rumors of wars. We can't seem to stop the plagues, the famine, the pestilence, the death and destruction. And governments and big industry do best. In the average Joe's heart, there's a good idea. It's a good dream. Of all of humanity in this world, literally bringing about a heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. But I suppose that even in those days, that if that was to ever come to pass, even if everything was perfect, somebody would find some way to complain or find something wrong about it. Sad but true, every time there's a party, there's always somebody want to fight or somebody want to cry. There's so many ideas and so many dreams out there. All of humanity's path are leading in the same direction. We're all in the same boat. When the ship sinks, it's all hands on deck. We're all going down together. Don't matter who you are or what you believe. In order to reach out for a better future, those who see a problem coming down the road, they speak up. And so that's why I say that these small networks and show host that are out there talking until they're blue in the face trying to bring common sense, peace, hope, and love to the world aren't doing it for nothing. They're doing it because they actually believe in the dream. And if only one person ever hears the message, then maybe that one person was the right person to tip that first domino to set this world in motion going where it should go as opposed to where it is going. So I shout at all four points of the compass from every mountainside and hill and valley a message of common sense, peace, hope, and love, and record the podcast and put them out there in the cyberspace hoping that somebody will stumble onto them. If not today, maybe tomorrow. My thoughts and my feelings forever immortalized in digital sequences, scattered out through servers and into time and space itself. Maybe someday somebody will look back and say, well, that crazy haired Chaziz guy, well, he did seem a little bit off. He had some really good ideas. Maybe we should have listened. Maybe we should have listened to his friends and the group called the Knights of the Round Table and got all this stuff fixed before it got this bad. If you're standing next to the ocean and you're dying of thirst, whose fault is it? In modern day society, we have access to cell phones. So if you're in reach of a tower, you jump on that cell phone and call one of your friends to bring you over bottled water. But if you knew enough about science, you could purify your own. Some things are just too hard. Some people just don't want to know. Some people just want others to do it for them. Which is sad but true. Sad but true. If you don't have survival skills and you get stuck out in the desert, you're probably not going to fare too well. No matter what your environment is, if you're not wise to the ways of that said environment and you don't have the skill set in order to stay warm or to stay cool and to stay hydrated and fed, and you're just not going to fare so well. People in the world that are in need that may not know how to farm. Maybe they do know how to farm, but they don't have the right tools to farm. As far as I'm concerned, it's everyone else's around the world's responsibility that when they see their fellow brothers and sisters in need, that they reach out and they bring them tools and knowledge to the table so that those folks can actually be able to have something to eat on their table. You know, I think that if there is a creator, if my faith is true, and everything that I believe in, that my creator, my God, put us down here with everything we needed. Knowledge, resources, and one another. Everything we needed to literally bring about heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak. And I say that all the time. But that's beyond the realms of somebody's vision. Some people just can't see it. Oh, you'll never get it done because you ain't going to be able to get everybody to agree on nothing. And that's a sad way to think. But that's the fact most people do think that way. Most people can find many, many, many reasons why to say something can't be done. Few people can look at all the downfalls of everything and find something good in that whole mess to be able to utilize that towards making something work. Those free thinkers out there in the world, you should be trying to find them all. Even the ones you think are crazy. You should be gathering them up in your communities and trying to get together with one another and resolving issues from your towns all the way up to your states and countries and so on and so forth. What shows through all them video links that I've actually posted in the Wake Radio chat and the Shaziz Mad Science chat room over there in the superchat.html is that within a 200-year span, mankind has exceeded all expectations for most in technology. We don't have to walk to the store anymore. We can drive, take a bus, or even fly. We don't have to walk down to the well and dip our bucket in. We can turn on the spigot, get some fresh water. We don't have to run down and ask our neighbors what's going on in our community. We can just pick up a newspaper, jump on the internet. But the sad thing about all of that and all those luxuries is that not everybody in a world with almost 9 billion people get to enjoy. Sad but true that somewhere in this world of plenty, there's those who are in need. We have the capabilities to feed every man, woman, and child on this planet. We have the capabilities to shelter them, to keep them warm and safe. And those ignorant people out there that say that the world is overpopulated, they call it exponential growth. Put too many flies in a jar and the flies will overcome their environment and everybody, all the flies will die off. Well, that in itself takes your exponential growth right down the toilet. So they say it's not sustainable. Well, by what you just explained about the flies in the jar, you just explained what would happen if humanity was to get too vast and it wasn't able to be sustained. Nature would put something else in the path of man. But at this point in the game, nature doesn't even have to bother because man's doing a good job of it themselves. The black man's out killing the black man, and the white man's out killing the white man, and everybody's killing everybody, and the brown man and the yellow man shooting each other. Race versus race, religion versus religion, lack thereof versus lack thereof. It's easy to see that the world can never become overpopulated. For anybody with some common sense. But to ask the educated fool out there whether or not the planet is overpopulated and we need to depopulate the planet, such as what the Georgia Guidestones seem to proclaim, they'll tell you, yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous. If you want to protest the system, then protest the right system. It's not going to do you no good to go out and protest the mans with the guns and the power. Stand in front of the governor's office and tell them how much of a scumbag they are. Because the government will call the man with the guns. And the man with the guns will come over there and either beat you toothless or pepper spray you or send you on down the road to jail. It's the ones profiting the most from all the chaos going on with all the protests and people destroying their own communities that you should be protesting. The spreaders of propaganda, the mainstream media out there, the alternative media, all of them are just as guilty. In order to further an agenda or further the finances, they spread death and destruction, fear, and madness, crazy, just crazy stuff. And we, the people of the world, are eating it up. Those of us who have access to the vast amount, like Steve says, the sum of all humanity's knowledge at our fingertips, are too busy watching each other beat each other up, lie and steal from one another, instead of doing research to benefit the world. All of these words, if they fall on deaf ear, can never even do anything. If you believe in what we're trying to accomplish out here, if you believe in what anybody's trying to accomplish out here, it's up to you to pass the message on. It's up to you, before you deliver a message, ensure that you get it right. It's up to us to figure out how to get along and how to work together while we're standing at this crossroad in time. Because the best time to stop World War III is before it ever even starts. The best time in history to get something done is now. There's been plenty of opportunities prior. Plenty of technology, plenty of advancement, plenty of chances to make things right. There's those folks out there who thrive on chaos and death and destruction for their financial gain, their struggle for power. But in reality, we the people of this world outnumber those criminals by the millions, if not billions. And one voice by itself ain't gonna resonate that loud. Two voices gets just a little bit louder. And the higher the number goes, the louder it becomes. The saying out there, you teach people how to treat you. And we the people have taught the world and the system how to treat us poor. I don't know where the rest of the Knights of the Round Table are today. Some of them's asleep and some of them's probably out slaying dragons. But right now, it's the time in history if you take the time to look back, you'll see history repeats itself over and over again. They knew about hydrogen back in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, all the way up into modern day time. We've developed machines that can farm for us, that can fly for us, that can entertain us, and even do work. Japan's got robots, artificial intelligence, supposedly satellites in space, and we've been to Mars and Pluto and the moon. And but yet here on Earth, we can't seem to get our act together. We can't seem to figure it out. Stephen Gibbons posted a picture link in the chat room. Says, don't try to bend the government. That's impossible. Instead, only try to realize the truth. There is no government, only banks and corporations. It's got a little kid looking at a spoon. I think it's like a scene from The Matrix. One of them, anyway. The power of the mind, buddy. Don't go out there and protest the government. Go protest the media. Stand on their front lawn and ask them why they keep lying to you. Ask them why they keep on spreading hate and discontent. Sure, one of the mainstream media is going to come out there and say, well, the reason why we keep showing it is because you keep watching it. And we're making money. If they're honest. The government uses the media to tell you lies, or the politician uses the media to get themselves elected. And depending on which channel you watch, will be depending on what story you believe. Unless you watch them all and do your own research, you'll never really know the truth of who's telling the truth and what not. But if you know where the lies and the propaganda and the racism and the hate and the discontent, the death and destruction is being advertised from and how much money they're making off of it, then you know where you need to be protesting. Because ironically enough, when you show up on the front lawn of Channel 4 or 5 or 9 or whatever the channel is, and you're in general vicinity and you're protesting the media for lying and propagandizing, they're going to call the same law enforcement agencies that they demonize with all the hate and discontent. They're going to call up the local police station and say, we got people on our lawn, can you come over and protect us? And it might come a day when that same agency might just say, wait a second, weren't you guys the one that running the stories about how we were so terrible to people? Why should we? When the politician wants to get elected, he goes to the media. Everything is centered around the media. If you want to get your message out, you got to get it through the media, whether it be alternative or mainstream alike. If you want to know anything about anyone or what's going on in the world, you're supposed to be able to trust your media. The government uses the tools available to them. And if the tools available to them is the mainstream medias, all these different channels, MSNBC, ABC, CNN, and Fox, and they know that they can lie to you and steer you in a certain direction, all these companies and corporations and special interest groups out there, they rely on the media, and they rely on the fact that you're going to hear what's been said and you're not going to investigate on the facts being presented to you, and you're just going to believe it and repeat it, and you're going to vote accordingly. And when politicians are caught red-handed with their hands in the cookie jar, the media has a way of twisting it and covering it up. So if you're actually going to take the time to protest, don't protest the government. Don't protest the police. Protest the ones that are telling you all the stuff that they're telling you that got you riled up to begin with. Hold their feet to the fire for the real truth. Because if there's laws out there that says that the media can propagandize you and lie to you, then something's wrong. And if you see it on TV, it doesn't necessarily make it true. If you hear it on the radio, it doesn't necessarily make it true. So the people of this world have got to get wise. We got to take all the knowledge of all the technologies out there, and we got to gather together, and we got to begin to build the world that we want to live in. We don't need representation, we need one another. Congressman ain't going to build the building for you. Congressman ain't going to build the cars or the vehicles that you think are going to save the environment. Congressman's just going to try to pass the laws to get somebody else to do it, who in turn will pass the buck on to somebody else. And before it's all said and done, that chuck hole out there in the street is still there, and your tax money's already gone. That's the world we live in. That's the reality. Have we been to space? Don't know. Is the world flat or round? Don't know. Is there or isn't there a God? Have no idea. I have no knowledge of anything that I haven't done personally, whether it be fact or fiction or propaganda. I've never been far enough away from the earth to tell you what shape it's in. I've never been to any other planets. I've never been far enough back in time to see whether or not it was just a big bang, or, as the atheists like to say, the magic man in the sky. People will sit around and criticize and mock one another as if they know it all, when in reality they know nothing. Science is faith, and religion is faith, and everything that you've heard, you take it on faith. If it can be measured in real time, you believe it a whole lot more. But everything that's so far away, or so inner space or outer space, is all still a mystery. And it's all still a theory. And the laws of physics that are claimed to be written in stone are only merely perceptions of what is the reality of all. So where do we go? Where do we go to from here? Stephen Gibbons posted another link in the Shaziz chat room. A nifty gizmo. And it's in big bold letters. Is this the solution to all our energy problems? We don't have an energy crisis. What we have is a failure to communicate and a common sense crisis. This is a really nice looking piece of equipment. Says underneath there, can two guys in a small office in smoke sitting on the solution to the climate crisis? Merger of ultra-dense hydrogen will give us cars and drones with unlimited range. House can be unplugged easily, or is it just wishful thinking? It's only wishful thinking for the skeptic. It's only wishful thinking. You know, if you believe that something is possible, then it's possible. If you believe that it's not possible, then it's not possible. And if you get out there and you do something, at least something gets done. And if you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. Amazing technologies, amazing links, amazing words of wisdom. Thanks, Stephen, for the links and the picture. Folks, these links, they're always going to be on that Mad Science chat room. You can always scroll back at the top of that chat, Tango chat. There's actually, it'll give you prior messages, 25 at a time, I think. And as long as they're out there in cyberspace and don't get deleted by the server itself, and I suppose they'll always be there, or maybe even in Google Cache. All this information, podcasts and everything, are up on ChazezRadio.com. They're out there. There's networks out there. There's people out there just like you who believe in the dream and to believe that they can make this world a better place. There's all kinds of possibilities. You have to decide where to go to from here. Because every single piece of the puzzle, every single answer, every single resolution necessary in order to fix this world is at our fingertips. But it ain't going to get done until we, the people, choose to do so. It ain't going to get done until we hold our elected representatives accountable for their actions. Until we decide that enough is enough. Alright, well, I think I've pretty much said everything there is to say. But I'm sure I'm not done. I'll be back another day saying the same old stuff over and over again, hoping that some of this message that will resonate with somebody, and the first domino will tip. If it hasn't already, it will send our world into a better direction. Like I said, though, these podcasts are going to be immortalized out there in the digital world and in time and space, and hopefully before it's too late, people of like minds will gather and we'll fix everything. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My
a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Is the dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one. Throughout humanity's existence on Earth, there have been rulers and there have been the slaves. Which line do you fall into? An easy question with a not so easy answer. The fact of the matter is that by merely being able to listen to the sound of my voice automatically puts you into what I call the real 1%. Nearly 7 billion souls on this tiny speck of sand in this universe. Most of them, nearly 6.5 billion, try to scratch out a living on less than $2 per day. The disparity between the haves and have-nots is incredibly wide. Yet, you are the 1%. The 1% which has access to clean water, food, electricity, internet, education, the list goes on and on. Daily, we are conditioned to make money, pay our taxes, because it's patriotic. Buy things we really don't need, and to teach our children to do the exact same thing. We live in a world where they're told our personal self-worth is measured by the money we have and the things we own, sometimes not realizing we really don't own anything. After all, we can't take any of it with us when we leave this little speck of dust at the end of the day. We're made to believe that we are unfortunate to those who have more wealth than we do. We are made to believe that because of this disparity, we are the downtrodden, the disadvantaged, without ever looking at the full picture. We are tricked into divisiveness between left and right, between him and her, us and them, between black and white, where there really is no black and white, just many shades of gray. And yet we still run on a treadmill like the little rats in a cage. We wake up, we work, we pay tax, we go home, we buy stuff to fill an empty hole in our souls. And the cycle repeats. Instead of doing a more intelligent thing of downsizing, doing with less and helping fellow humanity, we keep running on the treadmill. Bigger houses, fancier cars, bigger TVs. The biggest step to finding a solution is to realize a problem exists. The next step comes from within. I'm Kent Anderson, and you've been listening to Shout It From Me.
in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routines to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that our quite unsingable. We're off from mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Always looking to fill the turbo and the knights of the round table.